filing an instrument flight plan when you don't have an instrument rating. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today, as is often the case on Mondays, is Bob Miller, a CFI based in the Buffalo, New York area, who runs Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated and publishes Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which is available monthly on the internet at overtheairwaves.com. We try to get together and start each week with some comments from Bob on safety issues that we hope will be thought-provoking for our listeners. Bob, thanks, as always, for taking some time out today.
Well, hello, Paul. As always, it's my pleasure.
All right, listen, we had a really interesting accident. I hope I don't sound insensitive using the term interesting, but this was an interesting accident that happened in Oregon back in February, because it involved a couple of guys and a passenger who got into a Lancair and took off on what was intended to be a VFR flight, but they filed an IFR flight plan despite the fact that neither of them was IFR rated, and it ended badly. Let's start with what you got out of this accident, and then let me move into a couple of questions I have about it.
Well, at first reading, and the only thing I have to go on, like everybody else, is the NTSB accident report, which is quite extensive. It always is whenever there are fatalities involved. But it struck me as a case where a couple of pilots and their passenger had to get someplace. We call it get-home-itis, or there was an overwhelming intent to go someplace despite some wrinkles in the weather. And the wrinkle in this particular case appears to be a cloud layer at the 10,000 to 12,000 foot layer that overlaid some mountains. And perhaps the thinking was that if I could just get up through that cloud layer, I know I'll be in blue skies up above and we'll be home free. So the thinking goes, if it's just a thin layer and we're in a high-performing airplane such as a Lancair, maybe we can just go ahead and punch through it. And nine times out of ten, hey, they probably could have. But in this particular case, they seem to ignore icing, air mets, turbulence, and other factors which would have complicated this kind of a trip, even for well-qualified instrument-rated pilots. So was it an expedient to file that instrument flight plan to go up through those clouds? Perhaps, in fact, they were exercising some wisdom in the sense that at least if they were going to go in the clouds, let's file a plan so that ATC has the opportunity to keep us separated or other aircraft separated from us. Well, that's about all we can kind of surmise from this.
All right. Now, had they stayed at lower altitudes, they might have been VFR the whole way and they might have avoided icing. I guess what I'm wondering is, why would you file an IFR flight plan for a VFR flight?
Well, I think they, as I said in my headline, they were playing cat and mouse with the weather. Any of us, any instrument pilot knows that there's nobody to second guess or to check one's qualifications when you file a plan. You call flight service. Chances are the flight service briefer is not a pilot, may in fact not even know the requirements to be an instrument pilot. They just check that little box in the upper hand left-hand corner of the standard form, IFR. So these guys perhaps were very experienced pilots, VFR pilots, perhaps had a lot of mountain flying experience. Who knows? They could have been pulling this stunt, filing this plan for years. And truth be told, there's probably many more instances where we have individuals filing IFR flight plans who, if their credentials were actually checked, it would not bear out.
Well, what we do know is that possibly through disorientation or possibly through icing in the airframe, it obviously ended very badly. I guess what I have to ask is, I was not sure when I read this. I had to stop and think for a minute. Would it be legal for a pilot without an instrument rating to file an IFR flight plan?
No, clearly it would not be legal. The aircraft has to be certifiable or current for instrument flight, and the pilot has to have the required credentials in order to I'm not so sure about, let's be careful here. Filing the flight plan is one thing. We have dispatchers filing flight plans in the airlines, for example, that themselves are not, they're not qualified. They're not instruments rated and they're not pilots.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is obtaining an IFR clearance. That's where my understanding is the requirement for the certification, the proper training certification and airplane capability is to accept an IFR clearance. That's where those requirements exist.
Okay, because these guys were apparently told in their briefings that the conditions along the route at every time they checked were going to be VFR to marginal VFR. And that made me wonder whether if you were in certain circumstances, for example, suppose you have to fly through the Washington, D.C. area, and the only way you can legally do it is on an IFR flight plan. Does that automatically rule out any VFR pilot?
No, and I think if we check even in the Washington ATIS, as long as we have a ATC clearance, and we can get an ATC clearance as a VFR pilot to fly into the Class Bravo airspace, that is required, and they must remain in VFR conditions in order to do that. Filing an IFR, or excuse me, accepting an IFR clearance, clearly requires the possession of the rating. Now, here again, this is sort of a catch-22. I had a colleague not too long ago kind of fess up to me, Bob, saying, and he's a VFR-only pilot, says, Bob, I couldn't make it back under VFR conditions, so I climbed up through several thousand feet of clouds to get to where I knew blue sky existed. And after saying, shame on you for doing that without the proper credentials, I said, but of course you did file a flight plan, did you not? And he said, well, no, why should I have done that? And I said, well, at least you could have given ATC a heads up to see you in the system so that they could adequately separate you from other traffic. By not filing a flight plan, an instrument flight plan, and surreptitiously flying up into the clouds, there are a whole other set of risks that ATC is not expecting, and that is to find somebody up there in the clouds without a flight plan on file.
So I guess long story short, lesson of the story is don't use an IFR flight plan as a way to force ATC to give you what really should be VFR flight following.
Well, there's no black and white rules here. Let's put ourselves momentarily into these guys' position. All right, so there was a little bit of poor flight planning to begin with, but now they're in the sky. They've got jagged mountains below them, so ruling out scud running in marginal VFR conditions, they don't want to do that clearly. So the only other option is to climb up through what they perceive perhaps as a thin cloud layer. They could have done that without telling ATC at all and just snuck up through there hoping that there was nobody else in the clouds. But they chose to do what might have been a wiser call, and that is to go ahead and file the flight plan, put ATC on notice that they're up there as well, and then hope for the best. One could possibly claim that under 91.3.1, their emergency authority authorized them to go ahead and resolve their problem. If you saw as was pointed out in the transcript or in the report, one of the guys said, moments later, the pilot replied, and I quote, 9 Bravo Whiskey, we're in an emergency situation. That alone enables the pilot to do whatever is necessary to the extent necessary to resolve the emergency. So given the choice of scud running through jagged peaks versus climbing up in the clouds filing a flight plan to get on top, that might have obviated the illegal nature of what they did.
Except that the flight plan was filed earlier that morning before they took off.
The flight plan was filed, absolutely right. But the we can file flight plans, as I said, but to go on and accept an IFR clearance, and I don't know where that acceptance of the clearance took place. I don't know if that came through on the report itself. Did they accept the clearance immediately upon takeoff? They very well could have. So there might have been some method to their madness here in trying to anticipate that they're going to have a problem getting through this situation. And this, again, speaks to the get-home-itis. They really had to go. And so they counted their odds from the ground. We can scud run through the mountains, or we can climb up through the clouds if, indeed, that situation becomes an urgent situation, as it indeed had become. I think the lesson for me, and of course the lesson for our listeners, is filing an IFR flight plan or accepting or going into the clouds without proper training is nothing short of Russian roulette. it's difficult enough for a well-trained instrument pilot in certain weather conditions to remain upright in those situations. And to do that without the training, to fail to recognize perhaps the significance of air mets for icing, and if icing should be encountered, where to go, it's just a foolhardy move. And I think, unfortunately, these guys paid the price for a decision that, and given, you know, looking at it in retrospect, they certainly would not have done it again. But that's a situation that those rules, Paul, as you know, are there for a reason.
Well,
about 99.9% of those rules are designed really to keep us safe aloft. And any time we divert or any time we depart from those rules, we're just opening up ourselves to untold risks.
Well, and in that part of Oregon, if you're going to fly a long-distance capable airplane in the month of February, you really should take some of that money and get yourself an IFR rating, because you're going to be very, very limited in the month of February if you don't.
Well, clearly, and I want to just emphasize the point you just made. The best form of training that we can engage in for most of us is to pick up that instrument rating. That's perhaps the most cost-beneficial skill enhancement activity that we can avail ourselves to it. And to not do it and fly airplanes like that in the terrain that you've just referenced is foolhardy, really.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk briefly about what's happening at the National Association of Flight Instructors. I know you have some feelings on that. My guest is Bob Miller. I'm Paul Plack. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, and my guest today is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Bob is really a trendsetter. Bob was resigning from NAFI before everyone else was doing it. And this maybe makes him interestingly qualified to offer comment on what's happening at the National Association of Flight Instructors right now. And, Bob, I know you don't want to get into this too deeply politically, and I don't blame you, but you do have an interesting relationship and background with NAFI, and they are having some internal political issues right now, which could end up leading to the dissolution of the organization. I know a lot of people hope it doesn't come to that. But it looks as if it could happen. And we talked to Rich Stoll a few days ago, and he mentioned that that is one possible outcome. Let me ask you, if it was a perfect world and Bob Miller was going to create a replacement for the National Association of Flight Instructors, what lessons could we learn from what NAFI's been through up till now?
Well, that question you just asked, Paul, I have pondered since joining that organization 7 or 8 or 9 years ago and then subsequently resigning from it. In a perfect world, NAFI would be an organization that advocates for flight safety and improving the skills and abilities of its member CFIs. We know, for example, that almost 80% of all fatal accidents are attributable to pilot error. And there's an old adage that says if the student failed to learn, it's because the teacher failed to teach. And I think, as you know, there are many shortcomings in our flight training industry. And I think NAFI, and this was my original purpose for joining, I thought was in an ideal position to advocate for stronger standards, for higher standards for CFIs. Now, they're going through a change right now. It's unfortunate. I applaud my friend Rich Stoll for his efforts to help bring order out of chaos. But anytime an organization like that goes through a change, it has a golden moment of opportunity to redefine itself in ways that are beneficial to the people it serves. And my hope for this NAFI situation is that when the dust settles, they will take a far more proactive stand in improving the quality of flight instruction through advocacy for tighter standards, for taking specific steps to put a halt to some of the flight instructor mills, the flight schools that are milling out flight instructors with absolutely no experience, and getting them through the check ride and in a volume basis, and putting people in the instructional world that have no business teaching. I would hope that NAFI would help to put an end to that. I would hope that the redefined NAFI would become proactive in changing the curriculum and the syllabus that we have been using for 65 years in ways that will address the needs of the 21st century pilot, rather than being a flag-waving organization designed to build membership.
Well, and on NAFI's website, the organization proclaims, quote, and I quote here, NAFI recognizes flight instructors as the front line for quality control in the aviation world, unquote. And it seems to me that if you are going to have that as part of your mission, it's going to be, and I almost hate to go here, but it's going to be tough to do that unless you're an independent organization.
Well, I do too. I think it's going to be very difficult. You know, as any organization, NAFI is a stepchild of EAA. EAA has a different mission. EAA is a membership mission organization that is designed to, you know, build excitement and adventure and protect the experimental industry. They're not in a position to rock the boat, if you will, in terms of tightening standards and tightening up the rules and the regulations. I believe, like you've just said, that NAFI needs to be a strong, independent organization. There's something inherently wrong with any organization where we have 60,000, for example, 60,000 licensed or certificated flight instructors, and NAFI has a membership of just about 5,000. I mean, they serve a very, very small percentage of the total CFI community. One must wonder, you know, why is that? Why do we not see CFI certificates hanging, NAFI certificates hanging on the walls of every flight instructor in the community? I think truly many of us who have seen the light, if you will, recognize that NAFI is not the organization that many of us in the field think it ought to be. And so this redefining of the organization, as troubling as it might be, hopefully will come out in the sunshine with an organization, whether it be the existing NAFI or that organization dissolves and Rich and others put together a new independent organization that believes like Rich does and believes like I do and believes like many of the master CFIs that job number one is safety. And whatever we can do to improve safety, and that means tightening the qualification standards, for example, for CFIs coming into the field, that's going to be a painful move. But, you know, sometimes there is no gain, as they say, without a bit of pain.
Well, Bob, the real answer here, and you're kind of dancing around it, but I know what you really want to do, and that is the BMAFI. When are you going to start it up?
No, thanks. I've got enough on my plate, and frankly, that's why I really do commend Rich. I know Rich Stoll's a very busy, very intelligent guy who's done a great deal for aviation, and for him to spend his time to get in there to help redefine what NAFI ought to be, I commend him and I wish him well and all of their work to try and create an organization that, as I said before, needs to be out there proactively improving the lot of us flight instructors.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your thought-provoking Monday comments, and we will look for you again next week.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
My guest has been Bob Miller. You can find out more about Bob at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero, that's A-E-R-O-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.